Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and a special Christmas weekend edition of the program. At this time 77 years ago, the weather was as big a factor as enemy firepower. Whether you were in frozen foxholes in Europe during the Battle of the Bulge or on some of the wildest seas of all time in the Pacific, Halsey's Typhoon, or Typhoon Cobra, occurred just before Christmas in 1944. Pat Doohan was one of those fortunate enough to survive from a trio of sunken destroyers which, as the typhoon started to rev up, were starting to experience rolls of 70 to 80 degrees that made the ship's ultimate fate seem unavoidable. Pat was on the USS Hull.
Well, what happened? We'd take a roll like that, and then a wave underneath would push us back up.
Uh-huh.
And we knew we lost some men overboard during the night over the fantail. And I did probably a very stupid thing, or maybe it saved my life. But in the middle of the morning, I'd been on the bridge all night. And, of course, we didn't have any food or water or anything up there, or coffee, which is something you can't do without, but we had to do without because it's impossible to make coffee in the galley. I said, I'm going to go back and get some sack time. So being an open deck destroyer, one of the old ones, we had an open deck to the after part of the ship. Well, ship was on a roll, and I made a dash, and I could have easily been washed overboard, but I grabbed a hold of one of the torpedo tubes, and made my way into the after deck house. Then I went down, got in my sack, and I got immediately thrown out when the ship rolled. So I went up on topside in what we call the after deck house and was there with about 20 or 30 of my shipmates in that little compartment.
What did the mood seem to be on the ship? Did you see fear in people's eyes?
Fear and uncertainty. And I think on the bridge that night, it was uncertainty, and it was a fact that we had somebody that didn't know what they were doing. And the older men, they say, hey, we're in a bad place. And when the barometer drops like it did, why, the old sailors that were been in the Orient, and they knew what we were in for. And when you're taking water and you're wanting to jettison like the whaleboat on the side, and the captain wouldn't let you, and it was finally broken away and went over the side anyway, and one of the chiefs wanted everybody to put on their life jackets, and you have the captain say, what are you doing, trying to scare my crew? Why, you know...
No, trying to save their lives.
Uncertainty. And so it was kind of havoc up there on the bridge that night. But when I got in that after deck house, why, the guys were either praying or crying or cussing.
Yeah, that pretty much runs the gamut.
Right.
Covers it all. Now, how long did this go on?
Well, it went on. I got up in the after deck house, in that after part of the ship. We went over around noon. And when the ship would roll, one of the hatches was broken off and the water would come in. And then when it straightened up and go, the water would go out. And when it finally went over, I was fortunate. I had a hold of the handle on one of the hatches. And there was an air vent above. Well, I put my foot in that air vent and hold of that handle. But I couldn't get the hatch open. Here, water was coming up. Well, the latches on the hatch, or we call them dogs, they're kind of big handles. A lot of my shipmates had a hold of those. And there's no way, I had to kick their hands off. That still bugs me today, because I had to kick their hands off. They dropped down in the water in order to get that hatch open. I don't know how many of those survived. I mean, it just...
Even though none of them could have gotten out unless you did that,
none of them,
you don't know if they made it or not.
I don't know. I know some of them made it.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got the hatch open, it came back on my back, and several scooted out and didn't come back and pull it off of me. Finally, one fella did, and I was meaty, and I had no life jacket.
So you were almost trapped in there by the hatch itself.
Right. And I had no life jacket. My life jacket was on the bridge. I left it up there all night. And it had a flashlight and a whistle on it, which we were issued. And so when I came out of there...
Hold on. And I don't want to get in the way of... And I know you've got this memorized up here, but I just want to dwell on this for a second. So you pull the hatch open, but the pressure of the water pins you. The hatch has you pinned. You can't move, right?
Can't move.
What is going through your mind at that moment?
Am I going to make it? Yet, I never gave up hope. That's something that I just had. I never gave up hope. By then I'd come back to the States one time. One time we came in for a short visit. I got married. I married the girl I was going with before the war, Fresno girl, and she was pregnant when we left after our yard overhaul, which 13 other wives were that I knew of. Only three of us came back. Anyway, I had hope. I knew that I just couldn't give up.
You had a wife and a baby you hadn't met.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Expecting a baby.
Uh-huh.
But there's one thing that I think helps. I had a lot of faith from above, plus the fact I was a swimmer.
Mm-hmm.
And water itself didn't bother me. The elements, but the water itself.
Did it seem like an eternity before someone came and pulled that hatch off you?
It seemed like an eternity. And when I came out of there, like I said, I didn't have a life jacket. But there was one spare life jacket tied to a gun. And somebody up there put it there for me, and I slipped it on. And I was immediately washed up midships, then washed clear of the ship.
Now, when you say somebody put it there, do you mean one of the fellow sailors put it there?
Somebody up above put it there.
It was divine intervention.
Right.
Was there any reason for it to be there?
They usually had several extra life jackets tied to guns around there, but why that one was there at that one spot.
So you come through the hatch.
I came out the hatch, and the ship was on its side at that time.
Uh-huh.
And
can you see? What can you see? Can you see anything?
You see the whole side of the ship all the way up to the... It was over on its side, and I got washed up midships. And then another wave. Then about that time, one of my shipmates, one of those big old life jackets, had him jammed against the side of the ship. And we couldn't get to him to pull it off. And the last thing I remember, he raised his fist in the air and yelled, "Fight on!" He was a Pearl Harbor survivor, and he was one of the greatest guys on ship. But his favorite words was, "Fight on!" And that's the last I saw him.
Hmm.
We couldn't break him loose.
But you were able to get that life jacket on.
I totally, yes.
And then how did you get off the ship, or did the ship take care of that for you?
The ship took care of that. I was washed free of the ship. And I was out there, and there was a lot of sailors in the water, and there was life jackets or life rafts around. And I grabbed a hold of one big life raft, but it was tied to another life raft. And these big, huge life rafts, when they would bang together, I saw some of my shipmates' heads pop open like popcorn.
Ugh.
And I let go immediately. And then a wave came up between me, and I didn't see anybody from then on. I did feel the ship going down on my body. I mean, you could just feel when it hit the depth,
why
you could feel feel exploding. And
did it disappear from your view pretty quickly?
Yes, it went down. And pretty soon, I felt like I was being sucked down deep and deep. And being in the middle of a task force, I didn't, and you couldn't see. The rain was so fierce, it was just cutting your face if you looked into it. And all I could think of, I'm being drawn into the propellers of another big ship going by. And you could just think, I mean, you're just drawn deeper and deeper down at the depths, and there's no way of stopping it. And you fear that, and then all of a sudden you're shot to the surface. Well, after that happened twice, I realized I was going up a wave, and one of the tops, the crest of the waves was breaking over me and shoving me down.
Mm-hmm.
And from then on, I'd double up when that would happen, it would hurt my ears, but it only happened a couple more times.
We think about the movie Titanic or something like this, and you see the people calmly floating and watching all the devastation around them. You're still in the middle of a typhoon, and the rain is cutting into your face. So what is going through your mind at the time? What are you trying to do?
Well, trying to survive.
Mm-hmm.
The typhoon hadn't hit its peak until we'd been in the water for about an hour or so. And so we're right in the middle of it. And after I got away from that life raft that we're banging together, why, I was alone. And pretty soon the storm started a little bit subsiding, and it was getting darker, and here I was, can you imagine being out in the middle of South Pacific in just a life jacket, all alone and getting dark?
No, thank you. Oh, yeah, and then there's those things called sharks.
Sharks and barracuda that you worry about. Well, the storm had subsided, and I was alone, and I didn't see anybody. And all of a sudden, something hit me in the back of the neck. And I was terrified. I thought, I'm going to be hit by a shark. Well, I reached back and grabbed it. It was dark then. I reached back and grabbed it, and it was a broom from the wreckage. And it was put there for a reason. You know, hours floating right there, why, your legs get pretty numb. So I was able to hold the broom between my hands and rest my feet on the shoulders of that broom and raise them up. So the broom was there for a reason.
Sent to you by the same person who left the life raft with the gun.
Right.
The man upstairs.
Man upstairs. And I continued floating, and I saw a big searchlight. I said, oh, boy, somebody knows the ship went down. And I saw that searchlight going back and forth, and pretty soon must have been in a fast current because pretty soon I was over the horizon, and I didn't see it anymore. Later on, I found out it was a Tabor. It was also pretty near broken up DE that picked up a good number of my shipmates and other off of the other ship, too.
And that was the time at which the Taborer was picking people up.
Yes. What they thought, their antenna was broken off, their mast had broken off, so when they were getting ready to repair it, they saw this little light, and they thought a man was washed overboard. So they finally maneuvered and picked him up, and he said the hull went down. And that was at 10 o'clock at night. That was the first time anybody ever knew any ship went down. And so they immediately started looking for other survivors, and they heard some of the whistles, and they started picking them up, and the next day Halsey ordered them to rejoin the fleet. But the good old captain, young captain, he disobeyed Halsey's order three times, and he picked up 56 men.
And thank the Lord he did.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if Halsey said that. But
a little later on, I was drifting, and it was dark, and I saw this little light, little bitty light, like a flashlight. So we were issued one cell flashlights and a whistle to put on our life jacket, but since my life jacket was on the bridge and I had a spare one, I didn't have it. So I yelled, and they yelled, who is it? And I told them, and I made my way over to it, and they pulled me in. It was some of my shipmates on one of these big rafts with the bottom pretty near broken out of it. But I got in it with them, and I felt good about that.
But I meant that wasn't what you were hoping for when you heard someone else's voice.
No. But
that's kind of like, wow, I'm getting rescued. Oh, I'm still stuck in the ocean.
Yeah, and we were stuck there. The next morning at daylight, the first thing we saw was 12 and 14-foot sharks dorsal fin circling us. Every once in a while, they'd make a pass at us, you know, turn over, and they could have easily gone underneath that raft and got our legs, but they didn't. They just were biding their time, I believe. We could talk to each other. Two of them drank salt water and died from exposure, and we let them drift away. And you say something or say a prayer and let them go, and you know they're going to be gone. And we drifted several days, and some of the guys were going to go a little bit nuts at various times, hallucinating. And I think the last night out, pretty near everybody was in that frame of mind. One fellow went outside the raft, and the shark tore his arm up, and we got him back in. The last day out, one of the fellows said, there's a bunch of ships on the horizon over there, and he pointed over there. He said, oh, you're nuts like everybody else. Well, we rubbed the salt out of our eyes, and sure enough, we saw some ships over on the horizon, just the stacks and the smoke. And about that time, two carrier airplanes came over, circling, you know, watching for submarines ahead of the fleet. And they passed over us, but, you know, they were so high up, a man looks like a little thumbnail in the ocean. But pretty soon they made a circle, and they came right down at water links, and they, like I say, wiggled their wings, and we knew we'd been spotted.
They waved at you.
They waved at us, and pretty soon a big cloud of smoke went up from this fleet over there, and we knew a destroyer had lit off its boilers. And we, you know, being some destroyer men, you know, when you see that big cloud of black smoke, you know something's coming. Well, the big, beautiful USS Brown pulled up alongside of us, and they threw us a line. And when they threw us a line, started pulling over to us, the sharks went into a frenzy. And they had to break out guns and just start firing to keep the sharks from away from us. And so they got us up. They helped us up the rope ladder. And we got on deck. And, of course, we're macho men, you know. Nothing wrong with us. We don't need two guys on each side of us. Let go of me. Well, they let go of me. I hit the deck immediately. I needed some help.
Well, how long had you been in the water now?
Three and a half days, yeah.
Holy cow.
With no food or water. See, that the water was the bad thing. Food you can do without, but water you can't. So they took us in. The first thing they did was give us a shot of whiskey, which burned all the way down.
I imagine.
And then they gave us sips of water. I went to the Browns' first reunion a number of years ago. And the guy that gave me that sip of water wanted to have a picture taken with me, give him that sip of water. So then they... immediately, they were getting low on supplies, but they broke out their best the next day, and they gave us some food, and each guy gave up a sack for us. A little bit later on, they picked up the only six survivors from the Monahan.
Mm-hmm.
They were 20 minutes later, they picked those guys up. They were a good bunch of guys.
And so by this time, you've realized our ship's gone, the Monahan's gone, the Spence is gone.
We didn't know about the Spence.
Okay.
We didn't, in fact, each man gave us a sack, and the fellow whose sack I'm in, he gave up. I'm still good friends with him.
How about that?
He lives in Sacramento. We visit once in a while. But anyway, they took us into Ulithi and took us over to the Solus, one of these big hospital ships painted white with a red cross on the side of us. And like I say in the letter, Christmas Eve, we were carried on board the Solus and stretchers, and the nurses singing Christmas carols. I'll never forget that.
We've heard from a few different veterans here over the years who have strong wartime memories associated with Christmas carols. But not all of those experiences involving holiday music were pleasant ones. We'll hear both sides of that spectrum when this special Christmas edition of Hometown Heroes returns right after this.